Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening, everybody. I would like to welcome you to the Stop Child Abuse Now talk radio show sponsored by NASDAQ, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennis, and I am from Bellevue, Washington, and I, too, am an adult survivor of child abuse. It is Monday, January 3rd, 2022. It is the first show of the new year, and it's a very, very special show tonight. It's special guest night. I'll tell you a little bit more about our special guest in a few moments, but I wanted to tell you a little bit more about NASDAQ and its mission, because as you know, NASDAQ is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, recovery. Before I go into a little bit more detail about NASDAQ's mission, I wanted to encourage anyone who wants to get more involved with learning about NASDAQ. I'd encourage you to call into the show tonight to be a panel member. You don't have any experience, just a willingness and a curiosity to see what it's all about. As a panelist, you'll have an opportunity to interact with special guests. You'll be able to ask them a question or offer a comment regarding their story. Since it is a special guest night, our guest tells about their own personal story of child abuse and their perspective as an adult survivor. So to be a member of the panel, all that you need to do is call into the following number. It is area code 646-595-2118. That's it. You just dial into area code 646-595-2118, and you'll be welcome into the show, and that will give you the opportunity to get involved with NASDAQ and interact with a special guest if you'd like. So a little bit more about NASDAQ, because NASDAQ, we have a very, very important and single purpose. It's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with two goals. The first goal is educating the public, especially related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And the second goal of offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So once again, I invite you, if you'd like and you are intrigued, to call in and be a member of our panel tonight. The number once more is area code 646-595-2118. So we have not yet had our guest arrive, but I want to tell you a little bit about our special guest. Hopefully he'll be calling in a few moments. His name is Michael Walter, and he's from Scottsdale, Arizona. He's a child abuse survivor, and he's an author. Michael shares, and I quote, "My childhood was framed and formed by abuse. I was sexually assaulted by both parents beginning at the age of 5, and it continued until I was an early teen. Beatings were common. I was often hit with an open hand, back hand, leather belt, basically any item that was in easy reach. Psychologically, I was stripped of any sense of worth. I was subjected to hours of interrogations until I would collapse from exhaustion, ran away from home on multiple occasions, and attempted suicide several times. As his new book, which is entitled Stolen Innocence, A Child's Story relates, I decided over a decade ago to put my experience down on paper. At first, it was about therapy, because for many years, I was tormented by the memories and I struggled to face them. Putting them down in written words forced me to, in a way, confront them. Michael wrote scores of pages, and when it became too overwhelming, he placed all the pages at the bottom of his clothes drawer. Months later, he found the pages, read them, and started typing. Continues, I began to think about others who have been abused. I thought of those being abused at that very moment. For 2 years, I typed those pages. As I began to know that my story could help others, I began to edit the words and decided to condense my story into a few incidents. To make a difference in someone else's life, I did not want to overwhelm them. I wanted to let them know by describing a few things that happened to me so they could feel as I was someone who could relate to what they had been through. Well, I am so hopeful that Michael does call in as a special guest tonight because his words are profound. He's obviously very articulate and exceptional writer. And as I read his bio, I could resonate with a lot of what he was describing and sharing in his bio. And as we all know, the truth in being heard is such an important step in recovery, especially as an adult survivor of child abuse. So once more, I would invite anybody who's listening in, please just call in, no experience necessary. It's area code 646-595-2118. And again, area code 646-595-2118. So while we're waiting for our guest, what I love to do is open up a topic that's related to our mission, which is child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, recovery, and have an open discussion. So we started the other night talking about the NASCA website. It's not only all about, but in going to the website, navigating right through all of the different information resources that are available to us through NASCA. NASCA was founded and built by Bill Murray, our founder, and basically he wanted one place where an adult survivor of child abuse could go and get information on anything related to child abuse and sexual assault, domestic violence, human trafficking. It's all there. In fact, I see that Bill is on the line with me right now, so thank you, Bill, for joining me. And I like to always go back to the website because there's so much information that I could actually take 3 shows to go over the information that is available, going over and talking about the NASCA website. And I only actually got to, if you're on the website, which is www.nasca, which is NASCA.org, I started on NASCA programs. There's actually at the top of the webpage, under there's a contact list, and it talks about some primary volunteers that talks about what our programs are, NASCA programs. It's in red, it's on the far left, and NASCA has an abundance of programs. We have global recovery groups. You can look literally all over the globe. There's a map of the world. You can click on the area, and you can find a recovery group either in person or online wherever you are on this planet. So there is someone, somewhere, some group. If you need to talk to someone, need to connect with someone, wherever you are, it's right there on the NASCA website, information on how to get there. There's actually information also on starting a recovery group. If you'd like to start a recovery group on your own, you want some direction, NASCA has information on how to do that. We have a calendar of events that is related to our mission of child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, recovery. So events going on around the world. As soon as we know about them, we put them on a calendar. You could be on vacation. You could be visiting relatives. Looking on the calendar of events, you might see something going on in the area that interests you, especially if you are or want to get involved in activism work. regarding child abuse prevention. And you can join an event in the area, in any area. So we do have a calendar of events that spans the globe. And under the programs reviewed on Friday, we have these SCAN talk shows. So they're called SCAN, which stands for Stop Child Abuse Now. Blog Talk radio shows are 5 nights a week. They are Monday through Friday. They are 8 to 9:30 Eastern Standard Time. And Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we do have special guest nights. So anyone who wants to tell their story, maybe for the first time, maybe not for the first time, but maybe you like to do it every so often to share your story, that's an opportunity for someone to do that. There's 3 opportunities a week. And Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have a different format of a show. It's called Survivor Professional Night, where we have an adult survivor of child abuse who's also a professional, from our therapist, from our psychologist, or do work with the child abuse trauma survivors. And they facilitate the group discussion, and it's an open mic type of forum. And those are wonderful, too. So we have 5 nights a week. These shows have been going on for a long time. We have over 3,000, almost 4,000 shows. Most of them are archived, and they are also used as tools by many, many adult survivors of child abuse all over the world, just to go back to the archives and listen to the shows and learn. So many of us learn from hearing other people's, other survivors' testimonies. So those are also, not only are they live on live in real time 5 nights a week, but they're also archived for anyone's use. And the NASA programs, we also have what we call the Ambassador Project. So if you're new to NASA, you can reach out to your local, your state ambassador. So we have ambassadors, state ambassadors, and area ambassadors all over the globe. We are a worldwide organization. So if you want to get to know more about NASA and you'd like to contact someone that's within your geography, if you look under the Ambassador Project, you can actually go on to where you live by the state and see who represents NASA in your state. And you can actually connect with someone that you're a little closer to geographically that way if you wish. We have a mobile website. We also have promotional tools. We go through Vistaprint, and you, anyone that would like to print off any NASA promotional information. We have trifles, we have flyers, we have pens, we have mugs, we have a tote bag. I have a NASA tote bag. My favorite is business cards. We have NASA business cards, and on the business card is the NASA website. There's a little blurb about our mission, and I have my phone number and the blue ribbon for the Blue Ribbon campaign, which is really bringing awareness to child abuse prevention. And I don't go anywhere without my business card. So I love the business cards. So you can order those via promotional tools. And we have a highlight page under NASA program that really highlights all of NASA's offerings and programs. So that is a little bit about just under NASA program. If you go do a little deeper into the website, next to the programs is a red tab hyperlink, and it's called News, Articles, and Stats. We have had in the past a monthly newsletter where we would send out a newsletter to our members and with articles, calendar events, all different types of things. So there is a newsletter for communication. There's some great resources on the newsletter. I've really enjoyed reading the newsletters, and I've actually archived a lot of them and gone back and used them as resources. We have feature articles by different writers who are members of NASA. I've written an article that's in a feature article. It was back in 2020. It was how outdoor exercise helped me in terms of just really with my happy place and surviving in childhood, the environment I was having to endure. And I looked up some clinical studies, and was able to actually relate via clinical data that how exercise and outdoor exercise has proven to alleviate depression and anxiety, make us more productive and less rumination. So there's those types of articles. They all run the gamut, but they're all really focused and centered around child abuse, prevention, intervention, recovery. So you can find articles, also different news articles of special note that are brought in to that tab. We have past news articles in the archives. We have statistics. I do appreciate the statistics. There's a lot of different statistics out there, but there's so many of them that they're really almost all in one place. It's very comprehensive, and all the resources as to where the statistics can be found are also located on that page. So I think that that's really, really helpful. There's a media watch and video and graphics also under the news articles and stats tab. The next tab over is all about recovery, and it talks about adult recovery, recovery as an adult when we begin, you know, the healing journey, if you will, as an adult of what we had experienced in childhood maltreatment. And many of us don't begin on that journey of recovery. We are well into our adult lives. So I really want to focus on this for the show about adult recovery because it is really truly NASPA's mission to inform, to be a resource for adult survivors of child abuse who are either initiating their recovery or are on the path of recovery. I believe that recovery is for life. And just the position of NASPA is that recovery from child abuse is available if we work for it. There are many paths to recovering from child abuse, and some of almost no money at all. Then, two, there are benefits from getting assistance from the professional community, trained to assist us. Furthermore, there are numerous government and nonprofit groups you can turn to for help. The point is that they're there, and there are many paths to healing and many tools to consider using. So NASPA offers hope. So all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is for good people to do nothing. True evil lies not in the depraved act of the one, but in the silence of the many. So breaking the silence, recovery process. And NASPA is a place where any survivor can go and be heard. So I'm going to go a little bit into recovery, but I'd like to talk about some statistics because I think there are many, many people, many, many adult survivors of child abuse who may be exhibiting or have adult manifestations of child abuse, but may not have considered entering the recovery part of their. So I would like to review first some statistics. So regarding, this came from the CDC, there are about 42 million survivors of sexual abuse in America. Somewhere between 2/3 and 90% of sexual abuse victims never tell. The statistics is 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 5 boys will be sexually abused by the time they're 18. It's a staggering statistic. So that is astounding. Of those, we believe that 290,000 children and youth are estimated to be at risk of exploitation. 100,000 are fostered annually. 90% of those abused are abused by someone they know, love, or trust. 20% of child abuse victims are under the age of 8. Most never tell. Some don't recall the abuse. More than 60% of pregnant teens have been sexually abused. 55% of girls living on the streets engage in prostitution. 20% of prostituted girls are transported across state lines for services. The average age of entry for girls into prostitution is 12 to 14. 7 children who are regular internet users receive sexual solicitations online. 1 in 3 are exposed to unwanted sexual material. I hear, Bill, that you're on. You've joined me.
Yes, I am. I am on. I just wanted you to know I did reach out to our guest and got a message machine, so I left him a message. I don't know what's happened yet, of course, but I was told that we reached out to him this weekend, and he confirmed, oh, yeah, he was excited to come on and so forth. And it's not a newcomer. He's been with us before, so he knows the ropes. And I gave him the phone number again, so he may call in at any time. And I told him, if not, well, you and I are going to just do the show, maybe talk about the website and then ask our organization. And we would have him on. I hope he was okay, but that we would have him on at a future date. So there you go. That catches you up.
Okay,
I heard
you
reading. You're welcome. I heard you reading off of some of the statistics on the website. You know what's the worst thing about the statistics? We have so many. They're wonderful statistics. The worst thing about them is you don't know where to stop. There's so many. I don't want to like beat people up with them, but this is the truth. I mean, it's an ugly truth. You know, it's a heavy truth. It's a shocking truth. That's the truth. All those numbers that you read off, the percentage here and the numbers there and so forth, you know, even if you boil it down to one in five statistics, which are used by a lot of people, that's still, you know, that's millions. Millions. We have 330 something million people, and a certain number are children. But we're talking about the number that were once a child, and it seems like everybody almost was. It's everybody. And then, express that they were abused, or people that we suspect are being abused now. That's a huge number. It's like 20-25%. And that's a conservative number, by the way. The thing is that you can't measure it. You can't accurately measure it, because any test you put out and you call it definitive, you also know that for every person who's abused, only a certain percentage of them will come forward and say, okay, I'll take the test or whatever. I'll answer the petition, whatever it is, you know. It's very tough. But as I say, the bottom line is it's enormous, and we don't want to blow people out by it, but we do want to be honest, you know. You said a certain percentage never tell. That's in their childhood. A certain percentage, thank God, do tell in their adulthood, which is what we're doing, hoping to get people to do. But percentage of children who don't tell in their childhood is nearly 100%. We don't talk about this as children. In fact, I don't know anybody who decided on their own to talk about their abuse. I don't know anybody that did that. I do know a few who were young and who were approached by somebody else, like another adult or something, who were eventually able to say what was going on, but never on their own volition, never by themselves, never. So these are the shocking truths of, you know, why we do what we're doing. Because there's only a certain number of us that are in recovery, and we'd love to have, you know, more and more join us. But we're doing the best we can.
Yeah, but it's to me, overwhelming. And it's also, I think, what you said, overly conservative of a number. I don't think that, that we have an accurate number of truly the statistics. I think we can safely assume that.
The number, you mean, the true number is higher than we have written down.
It's
yeah, it is.
Much, I think it's much higher, yeah.
By a lot, exactly.
Absolutely. And so I think we had a guest on a couple weeks ago that said, based on the statistics, and if you just take the statistics of 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 5 boys, will be sexually abused by the time they're 18. He stated that whenever he shares his experience, he tells a story to a group, based on the statistics and the numbers, he knows that he's reaching someone, right, that he's touching someone that has experienced sexual abuse. And that was very profound.
I think we're doing that with every show, for example. I think mm-hmm. there are people that benefit from each time we talk, each time we make phone calls, you know, each time we do these shows and so forth, or do a presentation, or speak at a church, or whatever. It's inescapable because there are so many of us that have so far kept our silence, kept the silence, which is the worst thing, by the way, anybody listening to this. That's the worst thing you can do. In fact, I say it the other way around. The best thing you can do is to reveal what occurred to you when you were a child. Do it in a safe place with a therapist mm-hmm. or, you know, somebody you really trust or some fellow survivor
yeah.
or a group. Don't just blurt it out, but do tell it. And know that you're going to have to tell it over and over eventually. But we understand the first time it could be terrifying, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be there to support you, you know. But these are just
That's a really important point, because I think the first time is terrifying. And while you made all the points are great, but someone that you trust or in a venue there, someone you trust, whether it's professional or someone that you trust very, you know, implicitly, and know that it's still very scary. The first time I ever disclosed my sexual abuse was with my therapist. He's a doctor of psychology, and I'd been seeing him as I started to, you know, press memories or speak of the child abuse, and I hadn't been able to speak of the sexual abuse yet. So I'd been under his care for 2 years, 2.5 years, and I trust him implicitly. And the moment that I decided to finally speak it, it got caught in my throat. I could barely get it out. I had to stop and try a few times before I could bring the words out. So I think that's a big point, is that it's just scary the first time, and it's not easy. But it did get easier after the first time.
Well, right, and as I say, you know, we expect that people will tell their story, you know, many times. It's just the first time that you've never told it before that's the most scary. but mm-hmm. you know, we've not talked about it because it's scary. That's why we keep silent. For some one reason or another, we're afraid to divulge what happened to us when we were kids, whether it's to avoid the embarrassment to our family or reveal what we did ourselves or talk about Uncle George or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We avoid it because we're afraid of what's going to happen. So once we say it, we're still in fear. And now we're at least uttering what occurred. The next time, the fear may be a little less, especially if, let's say you say it in front of the same person the second time or the same group. It's not as big a deal because you've already told them, and you just want to fill in the blanks or you know, give them a little more detail. You know, actually what happens is after a couple of these kinds of sessions, you feel a relief that you may not have felt in years. You may not even have known it was there, because it's a burden to keep these secrets for, you know, a lot of people are keeping them for 20 and 30 and 40 years. That's a heck of a burden. So it's a release just to tell the story.
It absolutely is. I thought the first time I told my story publicly, I know it's on Nazca, that I wouldn't be able to, you know, face the world, you know, show my face, you know, walk outside. I thought, oh my gosh, here I am. I don't know what compelled me to get on the show and tell my story. I've never even been to panelists on the show. I decided to come on as a special guest. It was right after I disclosed the sexual abuse to my psychologist. And something compelled me to do it, and I did it. I was really scared because I could show up and I'd release a heavy burden. And I could finally just stand tall. So, to your point,
right,
it is a
right.
Relief.
Huge relief. But, you know, here's the other thing. You do have to be careful of how you tell your story the first time. In my case, I told a story to somebody I absolutely should have been able to trust. And I'd always been taught I could trust this type of person. He was a priest. And he was a priest that I had just met, but that I was going to be around for the next 4 years because he was at a school. And I was a board at the school. And I told my story to him thinking, thank goodness, you know, I'm finally going to be able to talk about this and maybe get some help. And he turned out to be interested in me himself. He kind of came on to me, and then he told other people, other men, that I guess he did. I don't know. But they started to turn on to me. And the next couple of years were horrible, freshman and sophomore years of college. And so it delayed my ability to tell in a healthy way is the point, by a decade or more, you know, a decade, let's say. Because I had been, under the belief that somebody of that type, you know, should be trusted, could be trusted. In fact, ought to be trusted. But, you know, I was brought up so Catholic, you know. So you have to be careful who you tell it to. And when I tell these stories, I always make sure, especially if there are young people in the room, to tell them that, you know, the last thing I want them to know is if they tell and they're not heard in the correct way, tell again and keep telling, because I shut up. And I think maybe the third person I told, who knows, would have done something about it. But I only told the one person, and I trusted in him, and it turned out to be not trustworthy. So, you know, keep telling is the last thing I say, you know.
That is a great, great point. That's a great point. That's where I think NASA is wonderful, is because the platform that it's been built for, you know, the website or the show, on the website you can find someone on the contact list. That means they're willing and wanting to take calls from other adult survivors that may need to share this kind of information. We understand, you know, your voice will be heard. We've walked in those shoes, and as you say all the time, which is true, our stories might be slightly different, or our experiences, but a lot of times the feelings are the same. But for me, even after disclosing for the first time the sexual abuse to my psychologist, I still felt like I needed a group of people that could truly understand that had walked in these shoes. And I found NASCA, and that is exactly what I needed and what I found.
I am a survivor. And I didn't start NASCA until about 20-something years into my recovery. So if you spend 20, 25 years in recovery, you're going to learn some things. And what I'm not talking about the technique of recovery. I'm talking about the experience. So I realized that if I went to somebody who had too many rules, or a group that had too many rules, that I was gonna book. You know, I'm not a person that accepts a lot of rules. At least I wasn't then. So, you know, I resented being told what to do. So that would make me run away. So NASCA doesn't have that. We don't tell people what to do. We tell people what we've done sometimes, but we never tell them what they have to do. They don't have to do anything. And yet we explain maybe 10 or 15 or 20 different methods of tools that can be used to, you know, on your healing journey, even at the beginning. And they absolutely do work. They work together, but none of them are required to be an NASCA member. Nothing's required. In fact, we don't even have dues or anything. You know, we don't have registration. Mm-hmm. So these kinds of things I learned by trial and error were not going to work with me. And I simply figured when I decided to set up NASCA that I would follow the experience that I had and not contradict it. So if I had to make a decision about what I was going to write down, I wrote down what had brought me the best evidence so far, you know, the best experience so far. It's very simple. But I think, you know, you avoid telling people what to do, but you tell them what you've done, and they take it a little better. They can hear it a little better. And you don't require them to go to meetings, but you say, we have a meeting every week. Some of them will come every meeting or every day even. If it doesn't cost anything, they'll come every day, you know, and so forth. So all the things that NASCA has set up to emulate are simply experiences that I had when in the 20, 25 years prior to my, formulating the idea for the website and the fellowship. So that's where it came from.
Well, and that's why I love, the website is truly so comprehensive. I think, you know, you will not leave the website thinking, where do I go, right? I mean, it is truly all there. There's something for everyone, wherever you are in this world. It is just unbelievable. So, Bill, I don't know if you wanted me to continue on with we can have an open dialogue if we wanted to go through the website some more. I'm looking maybe for a little bit of your direction on what you'd like to, how you'd like the show to proceed. Okay, well, I may have lost. See here. I think I lost the book. Oh, there you are.
I'm here. I just realized that somebody had left a message for me. It turns out it was Michael who told me that he had been trying to reach you because he had some kind of food poisoning or something, and says he didn't have my phone number. Well, I don't know if that's true. My phone number's all over everything. But anyway, he said he tried to reach me and wanted to express regret that he couldn't make it tonight, but certainly in reply to my message to him, he would love to come on at a future date when he's feeling better. So that's the story.
Well, we certainly hope that he has a speedy recovery.
Of course, of course.
And I'm glad that he has.
Yeah.
No, go on. I'm sorry.
No, it's just some of these people that don't show up, I'm very surprised because they've been with us before. And I don't know anybody who's been with us before. Maybe I shouldn't say anybody. But almost nobody, you know, a huge percentage of them, up in the high 90% of them who have ever been on our show, want to come back. That's just the way it is. We treat people well. You know, we ask pertinent questions. They get to talk about what they want to, yet we don't force them to talk about things they're not ready to talk about. That's another thing I learned in my recovery, you know, before I set up NASCA. I was going to make sure that nobody was forced to do anything, including telling their story. So, you know, we don't do that to people, and they appreciate it. And we don't tell them, we're kind of gentle, I think, enough, in our hosts, lead, but don't, but they don't, I don't think they're too heavy-handed. You know, we're pretty pretty gentle with a guest, especially mm-hmm. when we know it's a guest who's, a little tenuous. So, yeah. Anyway, Michael's one of those people because I was really surprised he didn't call in. He's been with us a couple of times, once before. Yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, and he's got written a great book, and looks like he's done a lot of great work. So, it is unfortunate because, every time I also feel, Bill, but every time I hear someone's story or a different, they bring their own experience and their own perspective, modalities that work for them, but I always learn something. It always helps me in a way, either whether I don't feel alone or I can resonate with something they're saying. But I always feel like I just really benefit as well. We all heal when these stories are told. And so it's just a missed opportunity. Hopefully he will be back, but I think it's a missed opportunity, not only for me, but for our listeners, those around the world that stream the show, that listen to the show. It's unfortunate. These things happen. And maybe it's the time of year, it's the holidays. There's a lot of different, it's cold and flu season. We've got COVID. So that could be a combination of things.
Sure. So the point is that we have plenty of time now to talk about anything anybody wants. In fact, this is a good opportunity to let them know that it can be a discussion show where anyone who does call in can ask questions or ask for something to be discussed, like a topic or something. And the number is the same one that we use every night, 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. And, I put that number in my phone, and I call it SCAN, S-C-A-N, the name of our show. And then I don't have to go look for it ever. It's always in my phone.
It's a great suggestion. Mine's called the NASA Talk Radio Show, but I guess I could have called it SCAN for short. But great suggestion. So those of you out there listening, write 2118.
Right.
So we are open for callers. And Bill, I know it's going to be some statistics. I had a long day of teaching. The first day of the quarter, I've been talking for 8 hours. So bear with me. I'm getting a little tongue-tied. But, you would think I would run out of hot air and the ability to speak, but I guess it can happen, right? But did you want to continue on talking about, some of the aspects of the website, or was there a topic that you'd like to bring up for discussion?
No, there really wasn't. I'll tell you, I'll go back to what I was doing today, and it's important, is thing that you described early in your telling about what the website was about, are place and time sensitive. So the place sensitive ones I don't have to do much with, but the time sensitive ones I do. In other words, the calendar of events. There has to be a new calendar for every place that we do. And so I created a blank calendar with all the right dates and sent them to Carolyn for the next year. Now she's starting to fill them in and send them back. And as they come back, I post them on the site, but I can't turn the site on until I have them all there, just the way it works. I can't do half and half. But anyway, the point is, every year at this point, there's a need for me to step back and spend a significant amount of time, hours worth anyway, to update the website for the following year. And that's what I was doing. So nothing I haven't done before.
So can you explain a little? I try to explain a little bit more about the calendar of events and who that serves and what that's all about and how one can forward their event if they hear of an event in their area to our attention.
There's one gal who is the facilitator for this project and recovery groups, service and recovery groups. So those are two separate things, but they look very similar because basically I set them up, the pattern for them. But Carolyn, who's in the United Kingdom in London, outside London, without her, we couldn't have these things. And when we started them, we were much more innocent than we are today. And I was talking to her, and she had said, you know, she could help out. I said, well, you're all the way over there. I don't know what you could do. Well, I'm really good at typing, so let me know if there's anything. So anyway, it turned out to be that shortly after that, and, you know, when you get an idea, sometimes you come up with a concept that you can use that idea on. And I was thinking, how can I list? Here's another thing I never could find. An accurate list of services and groups. I could find the local one. If you went to a meeting, for example, you could get a paper that had the meetings in the area. But what about, you know, if you didn't go to a group, how would you find it? So what we did was, this is the first file we made. I had to figure out how to present it too. So what we did was we created an Excel file for each state, and then an Excel file for each province, and then an Excel file for each country, and each each continent, and then a set of countries where they weren't speaking English as a first language, but we found numerous meetings in English, and so we listed them. And then what we had to do is we had to actually put things in these lists and figure out the format that we were going to do that, so that when we saved it, it would be the right width to put on our website, where if you clicked on the page, you would see a page that was edge to edge, but not over and not under. So we have to figure that out. And anyway, the long story short is we were going along, and she was doing pretty well, and I said, wow, it would be great if we could do this with a bigger group someday. She said, well, I'm ready. I said, what? So we, after we did the United States, which was what we were going to start with, she went on to Canada, and then she went on to, you know, other places in Europe and Pacific Islands and so forth. And it's a giant project. So that's the groups and services project. The other project is the calendar project. And unlike the groups and services project, the calendar project only lists single events that are unique, whereas the groups and services project is, for example, if you had a meeting every week or every month, we would list it, but not a one-time thing. That goes on the calendar of events, where things like a parade, you know, a demonstration, a talk by an important person, anything that's a single day, and doesn't repeat over and over. And we put those on a calendar. I mean, up a calendar, again, an Excel file, and I had to figure out how to do that, so that when I eventually printed it out to a PDF, it was going to fit edge to edge, not be too short, not to be too long, but have all the days of the week, all the months of the year. And I gave her a blank one, and she started listing things. She made, you know, I don't know, 200 of them or whatever. It was, like, for example, 50 states. And whatever she found in Utah went on the Utah calendar, and it went in the right place on the Utah calendar. So if it wasn't going to be held until February, you wouldn't find it until February. And so forth. And she has been doing these jobs 8 years. And they really are an example of something that makes, I think, NASCA unique. I don't know anybody else who has tried to list all the meetings and all the services worldwide, globally. Nor have I ever seen anybody try to list all the events that they can find all globally. I understand the events. You know, if you are local, you don't need to see the whole thing. But if you're if you're not sure where to find it, you know, try us, because you may have it. And if you see something that's not on our list, or if you should say, if you don't see something on our list, let's say you learn about that meeting in February and it's not on your list, and you go, well, geez, I'd like it to be listed there. So we provide you with Carolyn's phone email address. Maud and Mildred, it is, at Hotmail. But you write to Carolyn, and you just tell her there's a new meeting that's coming up, or an event that's coming up, that's meeting in February on the, I don't know, the 21st, you know, and you give her a little detail, and she writes it up and goes on the website. Same thing with new meetings. I just wanted you to know, Carolyn, I started a meeting that's every Thursday night at 6:30, and it's for adult survivors of child abuse and people who have experienced domestic violence, as we get people that mix those two. So if that's what you want, we can give you that. It goes on the website that way, on our calendar. I mean, on our services, because that is going to be repeated time after time after time after time. We don't want to list it all those times in the calendar. We just have to list it once and say it's every Thursday, you know. So you write to her to get these things up there, and she's been wonderful, very dependable, and pretty much what she does is she goes through all the lists that are her in her, you know, bailiwick, starts at the beginning, goes all the way to the end, and then starts over. And she just does it over and over and over. So
wow.
These are, they should be very accurate, because they are interactive. If you find something and you tell her, it's likely to end up on your on the website within a day or two. We don't wait, you know. She fixes that file and sends it back to me. I make it into a PDF file and post it and make sure that it comes up when you click on that name. So, yeah, every day she does this. Oh.
That is incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Well, she's an example. Yeah, she's an example of a member who, without whom we couldn't exist. We wouldn't be what we are. We could always just leave the bare bones of the website up and go away whenever we want. Lots of organizations do that. They stop being active. So they take away the active part of what they do, and they leave the, I don't know, I call it a billboard, you know, the typing of what they do. And that does help some people. But they wouldn't be able to find a group. And they wouldn't be able to find an event on the calendar. And they wouldn't be able to hear a radio show every night and so forth. So it's really a combination of many, many things and lots of volunteers, yourself among them, of course, who pull this off without being paid and without being told they have to, out of the goodness of their own heart, you know, because somebody helped them in their early recovery. They want to turn around and offer the newcomer today a shot at the same thing that they found, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it helps to take action and do something.
Mm-hmm.
For, I believe, as an adult survivor, you know, to take action and do something, even if that means helping someone else. We may not be able to turn the clock back, you know, and rewrite history and change the course of events, what happened to us. But we can, you know, we can take control now, and we can help in the present time. Absolutely. Well, it definitely takes a village.
Yeah, and our organization is much bigger than a village, because we are spread out all over the world. You know, I belong to lots of groups which had meetings in every town, or several meetings in every town. But we're not that kind of group. We are still at the fledgling end, I think, of what's going to be possible someday. And we have a group that's trying to coordinate it, certainly throughout the United States and worldwide, but we can't get together. So we don't have the same kind of volunteer. We have a different set of volunteer needs. For example, I used to go to a meeting. It was held every day, and it was a morning meeting. And so somebody had to be assigned to make the coffee every day, you know. And that they broke that up into, I think it was a five times a week meeting. Monday through Friday, someone else took the commitment, they called it, and showed up a little early and made the coffee so it was ready for when the rest of the group came in. You know, and that's what it takes. But we don't have that. So you make your own coffee here with NASCA. We don't ask very much of you. but, you know, we hope that you find that it's beneficial to even the small things that we ask people to do them. You know, and because I think it's in the participation, that's what you just said, that you get results. You know, in other words, you don't get the same results when you're sitting back and, you know, observing and so forth, maybe making an occasional comment, that you do when you get in there and you do the work. Because it is work, and there's a need for that. So,
mm-hmm.
Need for that work.
Well, and I like to say, you know, the more people that get involved, even if it's with a small volunteer opportunity, you know, many hands make the work light as well. And as you can see from the website, you ask it, the services and the information, it's enormous.
Yes.
So
it's a full-time job for me, and I, you know, I've been doing it for a long time, so I would be happy if somebody else would assist me, and maybe we could give them a portion of the website to maintain, and not take the other portion until they're ready to take it on, but we're not at that place yet. And yet it also stops us from growing, because I'm pretty maxed out with the amount of work that I can do. Mm-hmm. When you add in accepting phone calls from people and writing emails to people and just running the show, you know, literally actually running the show, finding guests, scheduling them, you know, scheduling the hosts and the trailers, which I haven't been doing, but now it looks like I'm going to have to do. All those things are necessary to do what we're doing. So if we want to add to it, we got to keep that up and then take on another job and another job and another job.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll always have opportunities for people. Yeah, go ahead.
No, what you were saying is we like volunteers, so you're saying we always have opportunities, right?
Correct. There are some jobs that, for example, the website thing I just mentioned, it takes more than just somebody to work on the website. You have to have a certain set of skills, right? And you have to actually have a certain temperament, I think, too, because, you know, websites don't behave the way you want them to. They behave the way you tell them to, but you have to learn their language. You can't speak in your own language to a computer. So I have a package of a software that is pretty graphic in the way you do it. But there are times when it's really beneficial to go look at the code and change things at the code level. So that it looks smoother than it will if you can't do that. Anyway, the point is that you have to do any job for NASCA, you have to have the time, of course. You have to have a skill that fits that thing. And you have to be dedicated, because everybody else relies on you, you know. And oops. You all right?
I'm okay.
Okay, somebody played the Blog Talk Radio.
That is so weird.
Did you hear?
Wasn't me. Yeah, it wasn't
you heard,
me, though.
Right?
I did.
No, it wasn't me either.
Do we have a ghost?
I don't know. Maybe we have a ghost.
Maybe
too. As I was saying, you have to. There's lots of jobs. They're big and small, but all of them depend on the skill set, let's say, and the availability of each of us, and of course our commitment to it. So those three things. You know, anybody can be a contact member, or anybody. If you have a phone, that's all you need. And you can be on the contact list. We'd like you to do your own show where you tell your story, because that goes on there too, so somebody can click on and listen to you. And we'd like you to provide us with a social media profile link, whether it's on Facebook or LinkedIn, because that also helps people see who you are. But other than that, you know, it's name, email, and phone number. And if you have a phone number, you're probably eligible. And so some of these things are not, they don't require a lot of skill. They require that you're awake at the right time. I don't know. For people to catch.
Right.
We even have that, some of that covered, because Carol, one of our main volunteers, she claims to be the night owl, and she had me put night owl next to her name. And she gets a lot of nighttime calls, in the middle of the night type calls. So there's not a lot of need for that either. But it's mostly daytime and weekend. So this is there's lots of things you can do. Do presentations when the COVID thing gets pulled off, gets taken down. I was doing presentations pretty regularly, but now we can't do it. Maybe it'll come back. I was doing a meeting in the living room once a week, and it was promoted to Meetup, the company Meetup, to a software company, and that's where the listing was for what I was doing. When COVID came along, I had just been doing it, and just was starting to settle with a few folks who were going to, you know, look like they're really regulars when COVID came along. So that's when I decided, well, I can't do it in my home anymore, but I do like this kind of sense of this meeting, so I'm going to do it on Zoom. And that's when the Zoom meeting started, which has, you know, really taken off. And it's helped a lot of people. And I'm pretty hands-off with it, although I did set it up and so forth. But it's three times a week, and each night, Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday, as a separate facilitator. Actually, it's not late at night. It's evening and afternoon. So that came about because the meeting in the physical place couldn't anymore. Now, we might go back to that. You know, it's not that hard to, if you have space to do it, you could do it anywhere. You could do it in a church. You could do it in a common room at a club or anywhere and promote it. And pretty soon you'd have a small group and then a little bigger group and a little bigger group, who would meet and just talk about any issue they wanted, but also, of course, welcome the newcomer. And there are people who come to these things who have never told their story before. And so you have that, too. But, you know, anything we can do at NASCA to reach our tentacles out and grow the services that we provide the survivor community, in terms of prevention and intervention and recovery, and all the different kinds of traumas, we'll do. We'll do that. We'll make an attempt to do it anyway. So,
well, I just think it's incredible that, you know, you did start those daytime self-help recovery groups on Zoom that are offered Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 2:00 Eastern Standard Time. That is huge. I mean, anybody can join, right? And there's no cost. I mean, there's no, you know, sometimes when you go through a psychologist's office or even a psychiatrist's office or a therapist's office, and there's a group, you have to give your insurance card. There may be a copay. There's none of that, right? This is just a service that's available.
Right. NASCA pays the fee to have the license to do a meeting every day if we want. So we don't ask anybody else to participate. They don't need to. It's free from us. We don't have a big treasury, but we also don't have a lot of expenses. But that's an example of an expense that we have that recurs every month. This is a monthly fee. And we're happy to do it for our community. And I wouldn't put a number on it, because if you said, $10 a month, all of a sudden nobody would be there. Because this is not how survivors really are. Most survivors are scratching, scrambling to, keep their head above water. I know that didn't happen for you because you had a good union job and whatever. And that's great. But I'm saying a lot of survivors are from the downtrodden, They can't get a job, can't hold one. They don't have life self-insurance and all these things. So, but we will work with people however we can. We'll try to find them, inexpensive or free therapy sometimes. And sometimes we can do that. And, to help them get their feet under themselves. So, yeah.
I think that's an absolutely incredible this program that NASCA has put together, and it's accessible, it's available, it's affordable. Obviously, it doesn't cost anything. I participated in them myself. I can tell you that you don't want to speak out loud. You just want to listen in. You can say that. They're very well facilitated. You want to have your camera off, anonymous, right, Bill?
Right.
You can be
anonymous. You can enter a name, not your name. You can enter like a screen name, and not turn your camera on. Sure, you can do that. And you're also not required to share. So there's no pressure in any ways. If I can make it pressure less, that's how we do it. So there are some groups that will make each person in the circle, they sit in a circle or whatever, share something. But we don't. It's your choice, whether you want to share or not. Maybe you don't share the first couple of weeks you come, but the third week you do. Because now you trust them anymore. Right.
I think that that's an important point, because I think people, it's nice to know what the guardrails are and how the group is run. And so if you want to participate in a recovery group, but you want to remain anonymous, and maybe you're reticent to speak, or you don't want to be called out, but you want to experience what it would be like, there you go, right?
We've done that with our radio show too, the show we're on now. If we are told early on that, I would do it, but I can't say my name. Some people think they're too famous. Other people think that their parents are so powerful that they're recently in recovery, and if their parents found out they were doing this, they'd be turned off. The tap would turn off, for whatever reason.
Right.
They don't want to say their name. I'll do a number of things if they wish. I'll change their identity. So instead of calling them, Martha Stewart, she becomes Mary Smith. And who knows? It's still MS. And I'll change the state they're from as well. So she's not from Indiana. She's from Iowa. Well, that's different, right? So Mary Smith from Iowa. Instead of Martha Stewart from Indianapolis or whatever I said. And we'll do that. And we'll write the description of the show in such a way that nobody will find them. nobody will ever figure it out because we're, again, sensitive to, you know, sometimes how you write things makes it relatively easy to find something. But I'm, you know, I'm careful about how I write these descriptions.
Well,
so you can be anonymous any way you want. Yes.
No, it's okay. So who facilitates the meetings? If you could just maybe give a little bit of insight or some information on that, just so people know what to expect and or how they're facilitated. A little bit about the structure.
You mean the Zoom meetings?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we decided we were going to do 3 times a week, 2 hours each time. And I was doing them at first till it caught on a little bit. But then when it did, I offered the opportunity to facilitate, not to host. Nobody hosts them. You facilitate them. And I offered that to 3 different people. Now, those 3 people have changed a couple of times. So it's not somebody's job all the time, or it won't be forever and ever. We recognize that there is a strength in rotation of service. Another thing I learned in other groups. So we do that with this Zoom group. I mean, I'd like to do that at NASCA, but there's nobody around to rotate it out to. But we have three facilitators, and when they get tired or something comes up, they'll just let us know. And sometimes it tends to come from the group, and somebody who's trusted in the group takes the responsibility. We just had a facilitator pass away. And it was a surprise to everybody. But she was a wonderful gal, and she was an older woman. She had a dog, and she had somebody that came in every day and helped her in the house. She was in a wheelchair. But she was great. Her mind was clear as a bell. And she took the job of facilitating for the Thursday group and passed away 2.5 weeks ago, and was still the facilitator of the group. Yeah. So then the group had to decide somebody would step forward, and they did.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm very sorry to hear that.
Well, we even have an international facilitator. He's Israel, and so he calls in from Israel every time, and he joins the other meetings too, but once a week he's the facilitator. And
how wonderful.
That works out. Yeah, it works out fine.
We are definitely a worldwide organization. I know I've been on shows where I've had different continents, like 2 or 3 different continents at one time. It was pretty wild. Or it's the next day somewhere. It's pretty wild. We actually had a caller join us. We have a John Doe on the line. So I don't know if John Doe wants to participate or not in our open panel discussion, but we welcome you. I'll unmute your mic to join us if you wish. We have a John Doe on the line. But we're just talking about NASA.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing well.
Been a great show, really great show. I've been listening to everything. I want to ask Michael a very important question regarding, his life whenever he was writing, when he put his papers away. He stepped away and, for weeks and came back and decided to write again. I'm in that same situation, Michael. We have a lot in common. A very lot in common. And I just want to say that NASA is such a wonderful organization. I'm very proud to know everybody there, which I do. unfortunately, you know, some things are going on where I need to be where I am, unfortunately. But anyway, I just want to say that, that what you're doing tonight is so good on an educational level that you have no idea. Well, the way that you're going about your work is everything that, that we support, okay? Because we all do the same thing. However, you're putting your stuff down on paper, and you're exposing that and teaching people around the world about your experience, and that is very, very powerful. And I just want to thank you so much for that. But, you know, I was asking you about that time frame. Whenever you decided
I don't know if you weren't here with us when we discussed the fact that Michael could not come tonight. So he's not on the radio right now. My voice, you might have taken my voice for Michael's, but this is Bill, and I'm not Michael.
Okay, Bill. I'm sorry.
I
thought it was.
You know, that's okay. That's okay. You know, you can reach him still, and he will be on in the future. He got you know, he got sick, but you can reach him. You know, the description of the show, which is about 300 words long, there are two links, and one of them is probably his social media profile, and the other is his book, I believe.
Right.
You click, you can find him through that and get and reach him. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I joined in late, and I figured that y'all were talking about a situation that, that he was involved in because of his bio, you know. And
right.
I was pretty
right.
impressed with everything that, that he's been through. Absolutely. But, you know, y'all are also talking about, you know, all the platforms for NASCA, which is very, very good. I mean, y'all have done such a great job in establishing this organization that, you know, I do heavily support the NASCA Foundation on all levels. And I want everyone listening out there that if you have an organization that you want to go to and be comfortable with and find support and find, you know, those people that are just like you and understand, you know, your situation with so much empathy and a lot of love, NASCA is the foundation for that, no question. So, you know, I want everybody out there listening to know that you're not alone and that, you know, that phone number that you see, call in, could save your life in every which way. It'll change your life, and that's something that you need to take in because it's there and it's available.
Well, thank you very much, John, for that almost a testimonial on behalf of us. We really appreciate it. We're doing the best we can. We're human, so we make mistakes occasionally, but no, we don't belong to anybody else, John. Here's another way it works. We can cut something out without asking permission. You know, if it's not working, it's not working. Mm-hmm. We just cut it. And likewise, we can add something without asking permission. If we don't belong to anybody, if we want to try it, we try it. You know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of freedom in what we can do, and that's deliberate too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I have been a part of things where you have to follow tastes of whoever your founder was, for example. All the way down from the federal government, which is horrible. You know, so anyway, we decided we would just have a private treasury that anybody who wished to donate could do so. But we have no fees, so you have to go through our PayPal on our website to even find where to send the money.
Right.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, we don't have a lot of expenses either. We don't have a building. We each work out of our own living rooms. We don't we don't have to support equipment. We each use our own cell phones and laptops, I guess, you know, and so forth. So, you know, there's not a lot of expense. We don't pay anybody. So, you know, we're pretty free, and that's, you know, that's how it was established. That's how it's going to be.
Well, I can tell you this too, Bill, is that, you know, the people that are associated with NASCA have been so motivated, and educational aspects are just off the charts. I mean, when you get into, you know, take an example, guy, Alan, it's Alan Stamps. I mean, this guy's in Detroit, okay? And he's handling, you know, foster children and, you know, I mean, come on. It is so deep out there. The people that are putting their hearts and their souls out on the line every single day, you know, and the fact that NASCA has that opportunity to let them come on and share their experience is really remarkable. It's so wonderful that they have the opportunity to do that. I've spoken to so many people that have been on your show that just because they were on your show, it massively changed their life in so many ways, you know, because they were opening up. Yes, some did it already, but you know what? When you come on to this particular show, because of the people that are involved, that's what makes the difference, you know? You know, just like Penelope and you and Carol, you know, I mean, these are experienced people can't find anywhere. You know, you can't write this in a book. It comes natural by what happened. So basically, if you want to look at it, a lot of us were trained by what happened to us, and we just decided that we had enough. We're going to grow up, and we're going to take the bull by the horns, and we're going to fight this against, you know, child abuse. So I'm just want to tell y'all that I'm so happy and so proud to know y'all, number one. And I think that y'all know that I'm going to be very busy upcoming, but the opportunities that NASCA has provided for me has been remarkable. I love every one of you all. You know that. And I just want to thank you all for what you do, because you are changing lives. You're saving lives. You know, that's what it gets down to.
Right. Well, John, I wish you every success. I think you know that too. And I just think about the world of you. And you know, it's not that's something you earn, I guess, kind of, you know.
Sure.
But you know, I actually go into relationships with people believing it's going to be a good experience. I don't test them, you know, and I'm not negative about, you know, maybe I better be careful because this is a new person ever. I go into it thinking this is good until I'm treated badly. It's going to be good, you know, and it
right.
is most of the time.
Right. Yep.
And you're one of those people. So I just want to wish you best of luck.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
Yes, John, thank you.
We have about 5 minutes left. What would you like to do?
Sorry, Bill, what was the statement?
I looked up and I saw we have about 5 minutes left, and I said, what would you like to do? Because you're the host. You get to choose.
Right. Oh, I just love having choices. I love having choices, which is such a big deal, right? Because as children, we didn't really have a lot of choices. We were in environments where we were being abused. And so I love having choices. Even small choices bring me a lot of joy. So, you know, with 5 minutes left, you know, I left, we were going over the website. There's information about recovery. And I think one of the biggest, and John brought it up, Bill, and you brought it up tonight, but I think the part of the mission that I love the most is even as painful as it is to have had these experiences. The pain is there. But it's the hope and the peace and the contentment that comes through healing and recovery. And so NASCA provides so much hope in the resources on the website. And so in the last 5 minutes, I really just want to, you know, focus on and reiterate that's such a big piece of NASCA and of recovery is just the hopefulness. And part of it is participating in the offerings, whether it's participating through the panel member on the show, participating in sharing your story. Because I think taking action is a way that I have found hope and healing in my own journey. And NASCA provides, whether it's on the calendar of events, recurring calendar events, whether it's participating in a recovery group, or as I mentioned on the show, taking a volunteer position, but just taking action is to me a big part of recovery and really instilling that hope. And so I just really, in the last, now there's
3 minutes left. I wanted to focus more on that, about just the taking action and how to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bill, I don't know if you want to add anything to this.
Well, no, I think that's really seminal. That's, to my recovery, that's seminal. And as an example of that, you know, in the groups and services thing that you talked about, the first thing you talked about tonight, the pull-down menu, the first item there is groups and services. You know, if you can't find a group, at the bottom of that is how to start a group. Because, you know, you can start your own group. And we give you, like, I don't know, 7 different examples of different formats, and you're not limited to that. But, you know, 7 different ways we've seen groups that are relatively easy to set up function. And, you know, we say, you know, if you can't find a group, start one, and we'll help you. Pick a style, and we'll help you. Because you will miss the opportunity of your lifetime, perhaps. You might miss the opportunity of your lifetime if you don't engage and you don't get involved. Because this doesn't just happen. You have to make it happen. You have to work for it. But it's worth it.
Absolutely. It absolutely is. Even if you take a baby step, I would encourage that. 3 day, because they end up adding up. Baby steps end up adding up over a week, over 2 weeks. And I just can't emphasize that enough. And my baby step in NASCAR was actually, I was terrified. I called in as a panel member to the shows because I found them on the NASCAR website, but I didn't want to say anything. I only wanted to listen. So, there's an example of someone that was taking baby steps, and I've become more involved in NASCAR, but I did it one little baby step at a time. I'm so thankful that I did. So, again, just to reiterate, the website is www.NASCA, which is NASCA.org, and all the information. You can find everything on the homepage. And if you want to go dig a little deeper, you can go and toggle through some of the hyperlinks in there. So I've got 30 seconds left, and I just wanted to thank you, Bill, for being my trailer this evening. And, John, I want to thank you, too, for calling in. I always enjoy our conversations.
Thank you.
So thank you. Thank you both. Thank you. It was always a privilege to be on the
show.
Just
wanted to support. Just wanted to come and support.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. And thank you, Penelope. It was a good show. I appreciate
yes.
it.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you. You're welcome. As I always say, this is the show. Best adult eyes on this planet to keep every single one of our children safe. So if you see something, please say something. It is our responsibility as adults. So with that being said, thank you and good night.
Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.